Good morning, and welcome to our meeting. It is 9:00 on April 4th. I'm trying to convene a regular meeting with Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Rebecca Wolf, President of the Commission. My right is Commissioner Sid Logan, Vice President. My left is Commissioner Tony Olson, Secretary. At the head table here is John Harlan, CEO General Manager. Colin Rock is our General Counsel, sorry. Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, is at the sign-in table. And Morgan Stoltz, our Deputy Clerk of the Board, is at the computers. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices. This session is for the Board and CEO General Manager to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. Right now, I will turn this meeting over to our CEO General Manager, John Harlan, who will facilitate the discussion. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioners. We've got lots of good stuff on the agenda today, so we'll get right at it. First up is famous Aaron Swainy with our media update. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Aaron Swainy, PR media liaison.
Feels a little strange being up here, to be honest. Julie no longer here. You know, I'll try to bring the same energy and exuberance, but it's a pretty high bar, right? So.
You really got to turn it up at Christmas time.
Yeah, oh, for sure, for sure. We're in red and green all over. So we're doing a little bit different. Julie usually brought all kinds of stuff, and she wanted to show it off, right? Thank you. We're doing a little bit, you know, a little bit more of PowerPoint for the virtual folks and for you guys. You guys can click on some of the links. So, yeah, so.
This is fantastic. I opened up my packet and I thought, wow.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm glad you like it. Going here.
Well, welcome to your first presentation.
Yeah, already off to a gangbuster start here.
It'll be nice.
All right, there we go. So the first thing was the Herald column for March was on the electrified home of the future. And what I kind of wanted to talk about here real quick was how we're trying to hit one topic over many channels. So you'll see later that the April Wire is actually focused on the electrified home of the future as well. We're doing that in the column, and then our Power Talks coming up in May will also be on that. So we'll have some guests come in, talk about all the cool things like induction cooktops. You know, we've got heat pumps, things like that. So we're trying to take one topic and kind of spread it out to many different channels. We know that not everybody, you know, gets their information from one thing. So, so this is kind of an example of that. The April one will be on our energy block party, obviously. And then we'll be doing more media blitz on that as well. Another thing I want to talk about was podcasts. So we've kind of seen more media organizations go in this general direction. And so it's more conversational. I sat down with Como's Bill Swartz, talked about a lot of different things, resource adequacy, IRP, electric vehicles, hydropower. And it gives us a chance to really just kind of dig into these big topics and talk to folks about them. So it's an exciting thing. Kelly actually just did a podcast with American Public Power Association. So that was on our community event. So we like the trend this is going just because it gives us more control over what we can say, what we can talk about. Generally, not a lot of editing. It's just kind of an open conversation. Just a quick rundown on some of the media coverage we've had recently. So I just mentioned the podcast with Kelly. That's actually in today's District Daily. 10-minute conversation with Paul Ciampoli from APPA. A great conversation about our energy block party, mascots, all the different things we're doing in the community. Energy Star Award, which I'm going to show off, which has got for the fourth year in a row, Excellence in Marketing. Krista Rasmussen and our energy services team do a great job. They work really closely. I think our score of J.D. Power in terms of conservation are off the charts. So really kudos to them. And then lastly, the broadband effort that finished up a couple months ago. We put some information out on the website recently just to kind of put a bow on it. Let everybody know kind of where you guys landed, where leadership landed on that subject. And then I talked a little bit earlier about Energy Block Party. We're going to be doing a ton of media stuff on that in the next couple of weeks. So reaching out to print, Or to reach out to the Herald, you're going to be doing a story there. KRKO is going to be coming. They're going to actually bring their electric van, do a radio show from here that day, have live music. Really cool. We're going to be doing some work with them on advertising and promos so they can run those leading up to the event and even during the event so they can, you know, try to get people coming down. So you'll see a ton of information on Energy Block Party in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And then publications. So I mentioned Wire earlier. That's going out. That's April's Wire. We're doing something a little different with the Wire. So we want the cover to be more graphical, kind of more engaging. So it can take a big topic like Electrify Home of the Future, break it down into some kind of easy to read tidbits. And then on the back side, we're actually profiling employees, talking about people who work here, what they do, and then just obviously some little news bits as well. But we just want to kind of engage in a different way and make it easy for people to read it and dive into it. And then Current's coming out. We worked really hard. Wendy, Kelly, David, the whole team worked really hard to put this thing together so that it came out before the Energy Block Party. So it's going to hit mailboxes on April 18th. It's going to every customer in the county. It's got a ton of information on Energy Block Party, Connect Up, Natural Resources, the Hydropower Day we're hosting on May 20th. Look for that soon. And then finally, this was a story that I actually wrote for the NWPPA Bulletin on women in the utility trades. It was a great story to research. I talked to probably a half dozen, seven, eight women that are in line work, metering work, tons of work. What I got out of that is we've made great strides in those areas, but we have a long way to go as well. But they were really open, honest, truthful conversations. It was a really awesome story to work on. And just want to thank the women that sat down for me. That is it. Any questions?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well done.
Great presentation. And thank you for working to get the word out on Greensburg adequacy and helping other people understand we're not going to run out of power. Everyone buys electric cars. So.
It's a big topic.
That seems to be on, you're at the top of Fox's list.
It is. Right? I think it's at the top.
Yeah, it's a big topic, and we'll be talking a lot more about it in the coming years. So it's good to get that information out so they have a baseline for it. Next.
Yeah.
The challenge is going to be how to make it comprehensible to people who don't have time to go to all the meetings that we go to learn about the RAP and the Markets Plus and all these really promising programs. I just try to tell people that we're doing a lot, and we call them these things, but they're huge. And they're going to help us meet our demand.
Yeah, it's complex stuff, and people don't have enough time to dive into it, right? So we have to we have to put it into their words and help them understand.
So good luck.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron. Great job. And I do have to give a kudos to Aaron and the entire team. Kelly, I mean, there's a number of folks. The things that they're doing are absolutely amazing. I mean, locally, NWPPA regionally, and even nationally, APPA, just tremendous work.
Yeah, and social media too.
Yep, social media, all
that. The ballpark.
Yep, super proud. You have the government relations report in your packet. We have Kim Johnston, Quentin Harrington, probably the entire team here, those of you who I see, here to answer any questions.
No questions.
I have a question, although it's a dead issue, I think, but enhanced second Senate House Bill 1216 concerning clean energy siting. I just have one question, and that has to do with, and I covered it up here, but it has to do with the kind of downgrading of the standards for the emissions for intensive trade exposed industries. Does that mean we're lowering the standards for what will be considered acceptable by the EPA and the Department of Ecology?
Ryan, who's on join us to answer that.
Yes, I'm on the line. Hi, it's Ryan Collins, Senior Program Manager for the district. So, thank you for the question, Commissioner Wolf. So this bill specifically relates to clean siting, and the change you're referring to is with the emission, the EITC, the EITEs. What it ultimately does is just redefine the type of project that would be considered clean a clean energy project under the bill. it doesn't necessarily degrade the compliance obligations for these types of industries going forward. It just aligns the amount. It's, in essence, it goes projects that would be quicker in the reduction of allowances that they receive. They're now lining that back up so that they can't necessarily produce more of these projects in a way that would be detrimental to the world. That said, the environmental community and the EITE community is having ongoing conversations. And so there is a chance that we may see additional changes specifically on this. There was an amendment in committee yesterday specifically on this issue as well. That said, it's only redefining the type of clean energy project. It is not degrading or removing any components for EITEs.
So this is not dead?
It is not dead, no. It is still moving forward.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much.
So it's linked to the budget then?
It is not linked to the budget. It's actually, it's been making its way through the normal process. So it's been up in Senate Ways and Means. So it passed out of its policy committee last week. It's in front of Ways and Means this week and should probably head to the floor afterwards. And again, this was a governor requested piece of legislation. So it's got a decent amount of momentum behind it.
Thank you for clarifying that for me.
No problem.
Any other questions on the pledge report? Okay, excellent. Thank you, Ryan. Next up is Lauren Way to talk about the water bond issuance reimbursement resolution. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning, John. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
So I'm Lauren Way, the fiscal coordinator and treasurer for the district, and here today to talk to you about a proposed resolution that's going to be coming to the board in a couple of weeks related to a water bond issuance that we're planning for later this year. So today is just a briefing on the resolution. No specific action items today, but we will be back at the April 18th meeting to request your approval of the resolution. So included in the 2023 budget is an expected water bond issuance. So we are intending to issue approximately $20 to $25 million of tax exempt water system revenue bonds later this year to fund qualified capital projects included in the water's capital plan. One of the largest is, of course, Connect Up. So that will take a good chunk of those bond proceeds that will be coming in. We're currently targeting a September-ish time frame. Don't hold me to that specifically, but early fall is what we're looking for. And between now and then, Water's revenue fund or operating reserve will be financing all of those capital projects, or the majority of the capital projects. Per IRS Treasury regulations, which govern tax-exempt bonds, the standard, the regulations are a bit nuanced, as I'm sure you can imagine, but at a really simplified level, the standard practice is that you issue bonds and then through the regulations, you are allowed to reimburse capital funds from the date of the issuance about 3 years forward. However, the regulations also allow for us to look back and reimburse capital expenditures that occurred prior to the issuance of the bonds if we declare our intent to issue bonds through a reimbursement resolution. So instead of only issuing or reimbursing capital expenditures on a forward-looking basis, we'll be able to look backward as well. So this extends the period of time for which we're able to allocate bond proceeds by several months. The issuance of a reimbursement resolution is a really standard practice for the district. We typically issue one with every new money bond issuance. So any bond issuance that isn't a refinancing will do a reimbursement resolution. We like them because they offer us a lot of flexibility in how we're able to allocate those bond proceeds, the period of time for which we're able to allocate those bond proceeds. It provides better liquidity for the water system and improving operations and days cash on hand. So I'd also like to caveat that the declaration does not bind the district to issue debt. So just because we declare our intent to do so, we are not required to do so, choose not to later this year. However, with Water's capital plan, we do see a need to issue bonds and do fully intend to do so later this year.
So I'm definitely not a bond expert, but I heard this morning that while the Dow was down 150 points, the bond market was good. Right, the value of bonds is going up. So we're going to be issuing bonds at a time when bonds are highly rated. Is that correct?
Yeah,
but,
right.
But we'll also be buying some to reimburse ourselves.
So rates in the market have been rising. So they are higher than we've seen, you know, in the last few years of issuing bonds. We, you know, issued bonds in 2020, 21, 22 at incredibly low, historically low rates. And we do expect that rates are going to be higher this year into this issuance. However, compared to historical averages, rates are still lower than historical averages. The historical average is around 5 to 5.5%. And in the municipal space, we're seeing rates around 3 to 4% right now. Those could potentially still rise before we issue bonds later this year. To your point about value, yes, when there's volatility in the general market, investors tend to move away from riskier investments like corporate bonds, corporate stocks, mm-hmm. and toward safer investments like municipal bonds mm-hmm. and treasury bonds, government bonds, call it flight to quality. So we are seeing that. And so there is greater demand in this space. And so, you know, we do feel really confident because of that in our ability to market and sell the bonds later this year.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So
we're looking for another comment.
Oh,
I thought you had another thought.
Oh no, I was just gonna wrap up and say next steps. We'll be back in a couple of weeks to request your approval of the resolution, and then we'll be back later this summer to talk more about the bond issuance, timing, bond documents, the structure of the issuance. Any additional questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Lauren. Excellent job. Yeah, next up is Andrew Flaherty on the Linwood 196th Street Southwest Underground Conversion Project, wrap up and final steps. But I also want to announce that UNDRA has just been received the manager for standards and transmission engineering position. So congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that was just announced this morning. So.
That's a big job. Could you repeat the title? Manager of
Transmission and Standards Engineering. Transmission and Standards Engineering.
Standards. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And best of luck.
I'm going to need it.
I'm sure you will.
That's a big job. Sure,
yeah, it's a big job. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
So. This was a very interesting presentation to read about, so looking forward to hearing about it.
Okay. So I'm here. I'm at this job, 196 Underground Conversion. It's been a big part of my life for the last few years. I'm the project lead on it. I've been on it since 2015. So this was last presented to you August of 2020 by Aaron Burke, who's right here. But I think I was on leave with my second child, so he took over for that. And so, yeah. The purpose here, just to kind of give you a final update on what's going on up there. And you're looking at an approval of amendment of the interlocal agreement between us and the city. Those pictures pretty. Doesn't look great out there.
What an improvement.
Yes.
I mean,
the traffic's not fun to drive through right now, but I'm really impressed with what the city's done out there. So just a little background. We were contacted by the city in 2015. They requested that we underground all of the overhead lines. That was one of our main fears to the area. So it was a pretty big deal, a pretty big request. So the project limits, I'm shown here 36 to 50, it was kind of I-5 to like the 49th block. And that included like the 44th intersection and all of that Fred Meyer traffic, and City Hall is right in there. So very, very busy. Have you driven through there?
Oh, yes, a lot. I have friends in Mount Lake Terrace, so I've now found every secondary route there is to bypass.
I found every good parking lot through there.
Huh?
All the good parking spots through there. That's where I found, because trying to figure out how to navigate that traffic while getting out and while they're constructing.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Well, I can clue you in on every place to go if you avoid that.
Project timeline, like I said before, they came to us in 2015. We finished up early engineering in 2021. Phase one of construction went May 21, December 21. That was the whole north side of the street. Kind of did that whole section first. That was kind of where there's a little less to do. I'd say less, but really there was still a lot to do. It was just it was easier to move it over. All of our lines were on the south side, so we broke that up into two sections. So phase two went January 22 to April 22, and that was from about 50th to 44th, and then jumped back in May 22 to Oxford 2, and that's where we wrapped up 44th all the way to I-5. Like I said, that was our main feeder, our main backbone through there. We ended up pulling a whole other circuit as well, because the capacity through there is just, the whole area is exploding, as I'm sure you've seen it with Sound Transit coming in. So we ended up tying about five circuits in right through there. 2023, that's where we are now. It's mostly just the paperwork at this point. We're getting all the as-bills done, cleaning up. We're kind of recreating a few vaults out there. Things have settled a little bit. As that construction's going, things are kind of shifting around. Sidewalks have cracked, so we kind of just that little bit of cleanup. That brings me to the local agreement. So that was what was presented to you in 2020. It was an agreement between us and the city about how the work was going to get done. First of its kind that we've done, and actually I think the first of its kind of anywhere, because I keep getting asked to present on it at various conferences. And so what we did is we had an agreement with the city where they would actually run the electrical contractor instead of us. They had to use one of our pre-qualified contractors, but they used our drawings and then did all of the construction themselves. It was very unique. It went really well, shockingly well. We knew there'd be hiccups, but there were maybe like two that I could think of that we just got in a room together and started talking and were able to work out. The city was fantastic to work with. The city's consultant was really great.
We had inspectors out there daily.
Oh, definitely, yes. More than one, actually.
Yeah.
So, we had two full-time inspectors out there,
yes.
So because they were jumping around as well. So the civil and electrical were all happening at the same time. The district's responsibility is in the agreement. We were in charge of the engineering. We provided the electrical materials. We provided the city with a like for like cost credit, which I'm going to come back to in a minute.
Thank you.
We reimbursed for any installations considered betterments. So that would be like that extra circuit that we put in. So since the city did the construction, we reimbursed them for that. City's responsibilities, they provided all the civil and structures like the vaults and the conduit, installed all of that. They installed all of our material that we provided to them. And then they reimbursed us for any expenses beyond that like for like credit.
Yeah, it's in a local agreement. How did things like inflation getting handled?
Well, I'm going to come to that.
Okay.
That's actually kind of why I'm
here. So
the PUD relocation costs, what we incurred ourselves, was just shy of $3 million. The betterments that the city installed for us were about $744,000. It's like for like credit. This is the number that I'm kind of here about today. And what that is in our relocation policy with the cities, if we have an overhead line that we move and they are requesting that we go underground, we give them a credit of what it would have cost. We stayed overhead and then they pay the difference.
Okay. So
the like for like for this project was about $1.4 million. That had to do with real estate, materials, all that stuff, the labor that would have been included in the engineering, drafting, all of that goes into that. Total project costs are about $3.2 million, and I did not include, and I wish I had now, all of the stuff that the city installed. So add another million to that for everything that went out there. Over 2 million. End of the day, once we're all done, the city's going to owe us about $250,000. So it was very close on it. So I wasn't sure which way that was going to go before I actually went through all the numbers.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was, I was very pleased, actually.
So what's our total out-of-pocket then?
Our total out-of-pocket is about just over 3 million. So you see here, I have the like what I put out of last year there with the movement board. We're doing accounting reconciliation right now. That like what I put in the interlocal is listed as 1.15 million, that number was calculated in 2019. So the reason I'm here today is so that we can update that number so that the city gets today's dollars instead of 2019 dollars. So we're, I'm asking to change it in the interlocal from 1.15 to the just shy of 1.4. Which is what today's dollars would be to do the exact same thing. So the rest of the dollars calculated were in time and materials of what it costs to do today. That's what the city paid for all the things installed. So it's just a true up. And that's why I'm here, actually. So the next steps, we're working on final billing with the city. They've seen all our numbers. I've seen all of their numbers. Everything's looking pretty good. There will be a resolution presented to you next meeting to talk about amending the interlocal. And upon approval of that, we will get that amended and then final billing will go out. So everything should be paid here this summer. I'll have a term dealing with it so we can figure it out. And then expected completion will be September 23, which is when they're supposed to be completely done and then we can take over ownership of all the assets that they've installed. Can't do that yet because right now they still have contractors out there and we don't want them to break something of ours. So they're still on the hook if we leave it until 2023. So that's it. So
more questions? Thank you.
I'm covered. Online, you indicated that this is somewhat unique in terms of the city doing the construction. Is that consistent with our line extension rate? Would this be under our line extension rates?
I would probably ask Aaron to come in.
I don't want to make a big deal out of it, but since I heard that,
which Aaron are we talking about?
Aaron, that's definitely not me on this one.
Is this different than line extension? The line extension is when we have to extend our distribution system to serve additional customers customer. So this is a little bit different, but I'm not sure from an accounting perspective all the nuances. So that's why I was going to have somebody that has much more expertise in that area.
Well, I'm sure you have the ability to do that, but I was just wondering if we have anything that is not consistent.
You know, this whole process, I'm Aaron Burke, I'm the manager of distribution engineering. This whole process and the interlocal agreement went through our legal team. And so it was approved there, but it mainly falls in line with our relocation policy, not necessarily the line extension policy.
Yeah, okay. No, it's
a beautiful project.
And I actually went back to prior presentations and I said, well, that's what they said, yeah.
Thank you.
Anyway, and also, I wouldn't want customers to assume that we lease expenditures, the utilities costs have been paid for by pre-planned and paid for in previous budgets. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, this is all under our relocation budget.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Excellent job. Next up is Marie Morrison to present on the Bonneville Power Administration post-2028 contracts. Good morning, Marie. Good
morning, John.
Welcome.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Marie Morrison, principal.
Short person.
I understand.
Principal Utility Analyst, Power Supply. I'm with you here today to present an update on the BPA post-2028 or Provider of Choice contracts. The last time we presented to the commission on this topic is October of last year. And my manager, who's my security blanket, is here with me. So the purpose of the purpose of the presentation today is really just for informational briefing. We don't have any board asks for today. So to kickstart the meeting, I would like to remind you of what we told you about in October of last year. We told you that our approach to post-2028, our provider of choice, is to be solutions-oriented participants. We also told you that we come into this process with an open mind, that we are open to any product that BPA will offer as long as it meets our needs. And then, as always, we want a product that is affordable and reliable and clean, and is and that contract should be viable for the utility's future. And then you also heard from us that we already have priorities that we set for ourselves in this process. And we fondly call those priorities the four C's. And you see that here. First is the contract high water mark. And what we really want here is a principled allocation, or what we will going to get from what we will get from BBA post-2028. And we also are open to a limited amount of augmentation, as long as that augmentation is shared across utilities that benefit from that augmentation. Of course, carbon is always a priority for us, and we want a 100% clean power product because we have CEDA requirements.
Excuse me, when you talk about system, that's our system or BPA's system?
For the system augmentation, that's the BPA system that I
talked about. Okay.
And Commissioner Logan alluded to this in the earlier presentation about resource adequacy. We are also looking for a product that would allow us sufficient capacity to meet our load service needs. But it's not just for us, but for all of BPA's customers. And of course, we desire a durable contract at low cost because we are public power.
So, to go back to that slide, I want to ask you about system augmentation. So, since we're open to a limited amount, now, is that would that be tier two augmentation? And why would we care whether it's a limited amount or a large amount or?
So we care for a limited amount because if the system is big, then there is a potential for melted rates. And in fact, melted rates is what other utilities have been thinking about. So a limited amount would be a way for us to make sure that augmentation is only needed if necessary, if the contract high water mark in aggregate at the end of the calculation is not enough, then BPA is open to augment the system so that BPA can service the load requirements of utilities. So the limited amount is a way for us to make sure that rates won't go up, because as the system gets bigger, rates have the potential to go up.
So one of the things I've been pondering is, we're a block and slice customer, and we're open to a load following customer. And Bonneville's negotiating contract, we're all talking about system size. Since no one's made a choice on what product they're going to have, how does that work? And so if we went to load following, would that necessitate an increase in system size that would be needed by Bonneville?
So at the end of the contract high watermark calculation, the intent, BPA's intent, is to determine whether the aggregate calculation is bigger than the system size of 7,000, which they are really pushing for. And if that aggregate contract high watermark is higher than 7,000, they are open to augmenting the system to meet those service, to meet that aggregate contract high watermark. And so if, for example, we're thinking about being a load following customer, we have to do our own calculation. And it's not just our decision that would impact augmentation. It's others' decision regarding, you know, the product that they want to buy in the future.
I just thought we're the biggest customer, so it might. So if they had to augment because of that reason, that would be tier one.
I think I want to dial a friend. Maybe Garrison has something.
Phone a friend.
What a great team.
I'm just going to pop in real quick, and this is Garrison Morris, Senior Manager of Power Supply. There's just a couple things to be thinking about here. In terms of allocation, that's historically been done on the basis of annual energy. And so when we're talking about product system size allocation, you know, that first cut, the way that it's traditionally been done and the way that it was done in the regional dialogue contract is on the basis of annual energy. You're right, Commissioner Logan, that we need to make sure that the system has appropriate capacity to serve all customers based on the product distribution that results from that. We've asked for that analysis to ensure ourselves that we will not be placing a risk on BPA that they will not be able to meet, so that when we go into our IRP process, we can look at those different BPA products with reasonable confidence that BPA will be able to serve us under those products without, you know, taking on a cost or a reliability risk. So we're doing that on the back end, but that is not where BPA is right now when thinking about allocation.
The other thing I've been pondering is it seems like augmentation potentially could help them. Be helpful to the whole region just for adequacy. If there's more devices generating more power, whatever they are. And so I'm wondering what effect, again, would we have if we change to load following and they have to work in some new resources or contract for new resources, and how that impacts the whole system.
Yeah.
In a beneficial way. And I understand it may increase our cost. And everyone's costs,
that's really the balance. The core assumption is there's only a limited amount of resources that can be procured at or below BPA's existing cost of service. Right. So once we exhaust those limited ones, probably the Columbia Generating Station uprate, that's probably one of those projects. But after that, we would expect, barring other things, that more augmentation increases costs, and that's Bonneville doing that. And so what's important is, well, why are they increasing costs, and do we get, as Snohomish PUD, the benefit of those potential cost increases? Because at $240 million a year, what we pay now, a 1% increase for us is a big deal compared to a 1% increase in other places. So we want to make sure that any augmentation that increases those costs is something that we get a direct benefit from. So we'll be thinking about what that system size needs to be. But our perspective is that the region will benefit from resources, but Bonneville doesn't necessarily need to build all of those resources if those costs go to us unduly. We can also develop resources, also help the region, and potentially keep those costs more contained. So that's the sort of balance that we're looking for.
Thank you.
Well, I've been trying to express exactly that to our constituents when they worry. And they worry about BPA itself. Are they going to be solvent? What if BPA goes under? I say it's not going to go. I just can't imagine that. I mean, I can imagine it, but people worry about BPA as an institution and how solvent that will be in the future with the low water in the river. The waters are down, I mean, levels right now for this year. And so.
That's totally fair, and I'm going to stop being so long-winded up here. But for those that might be listening and for our commissioners, that, you know, there's two things that I would just want to remind everybody. You know, BPA is obligated under the Northwest Power Act to serve the entirety of our load. I'm sure if we were to go to BPA right now and say, BPA, you know, we're thinking about this new product type. We're worried you don't have enough resources to serve our load. One of the first things that BPA would say is that the Northwest Power Act enables us to add the resources that we need to serve your load under any of the products that we offer. So they do have the statutory authority to go and get those resources. We just want to make sure that when we make those choices, we understand the risks of BPA potentially doing that expensively. And we're getting great value for our customers, because you roll up $240 million a year for 20 years, it's a $4.8 billion contract, no pressure, Marie. And we want to make sure that we are getting a, you know, just a really strong foundation for what we need to do in Snohomish County and Camino Island for our customers.
And where do we replace Bonneville for what we're paying today?
Well, this is maybe a bit off topic, but you know, these are related questions, all these questions. And then I think about BPA's transmission future. What are they going to do with all, well, that's going to be very expensive. But pardon, we do have federal monies coming to help with the transmission costs, I believe. Well, maybe that's for a later discussion.
I want to touch a little bit on the limited amount of augmentation. And what I do want to point out is there's a reason why it's limited, because carbon is an issue. If EPA just augments the system for using any other resource, that would be a problem, because we have carbon mandates and EPA is seriously thinking about carbon-free resources, because for now states don't have mandates, but it could change in the future. So that's why limitation is augmentation is very limited from their perspective. So this picture is just to show you how we have created opportunities for collaboration with our peers and also with BPA. So we, like I said, we are solutions oriented participants in this process, and we have created tables so that we can collaborate with others to reach a good outcome. So let me take a step back and bring you to the provider of choice concept highlights. This is not really exhaustive. It's just to give you some takeaways of what we have seen in what BPA has presented from the concept paper in July and how it has evolved to the previous concept. So what we're really seeing here is that the provider of choice proposal is significantly similar to the current contract. And in the grand scheme of things, that's not necessarily a bad thing for us. And I would walk you through the different components. We see favorable elements in the provider of choice concept. One of them is fixed system size. And we've talked about, you know, augmentation previously. But from our perspective, a fixed system size is beneficial because it preserves the value of the federal system and it provides for certainty in planning. Another favorable element that we've seen from the concept, updated concept, is the update to conservation and load growth allocation. This is an improvement from what we saw in the July concept paper. But having said that, there are still issues that remain to be resolved. And the two of the most important ones for us, included in our four C's, is carbon and capacity. And I will walk you through the details. I know this slide is busy, and it is just a picture to show you how BPA's positions have moved. And I won't put too much weight on the numbers, because the average megawatts that you see here are still in flight. So the takeaway that I want to share with you are the concepts that are shown in this slide. So let's go to the first C in our priority, which is contract high water mark, contract high water mark allocation. The important thing for us here is how DBA is valuing conservation. And we have maintained that conservation has preserved our contract high water mark headroom during this current contract that we have, and it should be recognized. And even if there is conservation not reported to BPA, those conservation numbers are valid and should be recognized in the next contract. But others are coming from a different perspective. They see conservation as a policy choice, and that giving full credit for conservation is a disadvantage to smaller utilities because they don't have the resources to do conservation on their own. So what has BPA done? BPA has moved their position from crediting 25% of self-funded conservation in contract high water mark calculations to from 25% to 50% of self-funded conservation credited to CHWM calculation. For us, it's an improvement from July, but there's still more work to be done here. The longer term solution for us is to work with BPA to define conservation more broadly. And we are in the process of doing that.
Could BPA do more to help the smaller utilities do more conservation?
In fact, they do help small utilities with the energy conservation agreements. Utilities have an agreement with BPA to pursue conservation, and BPA does the conservation for them, for smaller utilities who can do it on their own. But for bigger utilities like us, we want the bar to be higher. So we do conservation so much more than BPA is allowing for us to do, because it's a value for us. We value conservation, so we go over and beyond what BPA allows us to do.
Maybe I'm confusing it with energy efficiency, which is part of conservation, but it seems that the smaller PUDs could do a lot of energy efficiency, which would not be so costly, but what do I know? Okay, go on.
I'm with you, Commissioner Wolf, because I'm not an expert in conservation. So, our conservation folks here, they're doing a great job helping us reach out to BPA so that we can forward our goal on conservation.
And just to pile on to that a little bit, we see our conservation, our energy efficiency, which really is the same thing, as us augmenting the system, right? It's very much, we can either go build a resource or we can figure out how to eliminate the need for that power, right? So, of course, we have a heavy bias that we should get 100% reimbursement for the self-funded. So there's still a huge gap there, right? I mean, it in my mind, it doesn't make sense. And I understand it may be more difficult for the smaller utilities, but that still is a choice, right? For us, it's our next most cost-effective resource beyond the BPA contract, right? In our current, or some of our current home generation. It just makes sense. So that's a choice.
We need more education on that to the, you know, the PPC and the PNEC.
Well, it doesn't fit their narrative. And I don't want to get, because I'd get way outside my league here, but it doesn't fit their narrative for the smaller utilities, because they just want BPA, they don't want to count that, so that BPA will raise their own needs.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Our customers are paying for it, they should get full credit for it.
Yeah, no, you and I are in violent agreement.
We lobby for that.
Well, we have a legal basis to challenge, let them go to the lawsuit.
Well, I think we are working
collaboratively through the process now. I will have to be determined on how aggressively we pursue that. Well, and again, I would toss it to Garrison or Marie or even Colin to answer that. So that wouldn't be tainted as much with my bias.
Yeah, well, the other thing I was wondering is you know, at some point, we'll have to augment the system. And I wonder if there's a way that they can go retroactively and credit us for the augmentation we did. So, I mean, I guess they could argue that we augmented it when they didn't ask us to. But they're going to end up augmenting at some point. And I'm just wondering if there's a way to recover that at some point.
Well,
that's part of the conversation.
That's part of the conversation, but the other part of that conversation, which to me is even more applicable, is if they want to continue to incentivize energy efficiency.
Right.
And what they're doing is they're disincentivizing energy efficiency, which makes no sense when I'm not super sharp, but I can do the math, and we're going to need additional augmentation.
Right.
Right. With electrification, more EVs, low growth, and you know, for many of our public power peers, that's fairly significant.
Yeah,
it just seems to make sense.
And it seems like when Bonneville needs augmentation, they're going to do it in conservation, which we've already done.
So. Yeah. Well, I think we're all on the same page. I don't want to get a double whammy here. So
sorry, Marie. Yeah,
we're passionate.
We're off track here. Well, our brains are working.
Yeah,
it's big dollars for us.
And learning.
Our customers.
Yeah. All right, so we've talked a little bit about system size and augmentation. I think everybody in public power is amenable to that, but the clincher here is the amount of augmentation. So for Snohomish, we are open to a modest amount, but other utilities are pushing for a higher augmentation up to a system size of 7,500. And again, here, this would get really murky because who would pay for that augmentation? Other utilities are growing while others are not at this point in time. So what BPA has proposed is to apply a limited amount of augmentation enough to make the contract high watermark that utilities need from BPA for load service. And here we see the Columbia Generating Station upgrade as the resource to augment the system, because based on public power analysis, public power council analysis, that resource would be equivalent to the lowest rates compared to other resources that we can look for in system augmentation. So these are the following would be issues that need more solutions from BPA, more open-minded approach from BPA. So we know that we have a need for 100% clean energy because we have CEDA requirements, and other utilities are also pushing for that. Some utilities don't have carbon mandates. They could have carbon mandates in the future. So on this issue, BPA is not really meeting customers' needs. In March, when Public Power Council presented its concept paper, we made a proposal for BPA to facilitate carbon reallocation of RECs among utilities to get us to CEDA. But BPA's decision is to not consider or not facilitate customer reallocation of RECs, because from their perspective, that is not consistent with their statutes. So instead, the solution that they have presented is to develop a policy for carbon-free resource acquisitions. And that policy will be all-encompassing. Carbon-free resources, not just for tier one augmentation, but also for tier two options and balancing purchases. We haven't seen that policy yet, but that is where they're going. And they have also endeavored to do a better greenhouse gas accounting of their fuel needs. From Snohomish's perspective, that doesn't meet the mark, right? So we'll continue to work with PEA on this carbon issue. So more to come on this. Capacity. This is a really complicated topic, so I want to bring you to a review of what we presented to you in October. We know that we have seasonal capacity deficits. There are certain hours of the year where we are deficit in capacity. And we also know that with the RAP coming up, which we will be participating, we need sufficient capacity to meet that requirement. And our goal really here is for BEA to provide a product that meets our BEAT requirements. Because it's getting to be more important. It's not about energy anymore, it's about capacity also.
Excuse me for one moment. Can you stay on that slide just for a minute? So how does storage help in that way?
Storage will help with capacity, but
in the RAP, will RAP be helpful to our meeting our capacity demands?
Yep, I will call the expert here.
Always excited to talk about the battery project. So the battery project is just a capacity resource. It's not an energy resource at all. In fact, it's actually net load, right? So more energy goes in than comes out just because of the return trip efficiency of how it stores and dispatches energy. So that is a pure capacity product. It's something that we would have access to. We wouldn't have, it's not subject to market rates like what we've been sourcing from the market is. And you get credit for it under the RAP program, which is a good thing. Participating in the RAP program is also a good thing for capacity because there will be additional capacity products that we can get from counterparties there. And participating in that also pools those resources so that as long as you're sufficient on paper, on a forward basis, you have access to that pool in case what you have, you know, experiences really extreme weather or an unplanned outage or something like that. So consider it insurance policy behind those resources that we acquire.
Sure, thank you.
Yeah,
of course.
PNET requirements, again, on this issue, we don't see BPA meeting customers' needs. And that is because BPA has presented a proposal that block and slice customers, which they call planning products. Block and slice are planning products from their perspective. Block and slice customers are responsible for covering their deficits, for covering their load uncertainty during those hours when they are deficit in capacity. So the solution we see here is to encourage BPA to be creative, to develop products that would meet block and slice customer needs. For right now, we haven't seen much from them. They have presented a block with shaping capacity, but that is not good enough for us at this point in time. There has to be more that they can offer so that people have the right to choose product choice. People have the right to choose whatever products that best fit their needs. So this new one, the load-specific adjustment, is something that was presented this year. And this is to just for BPA and utilities to consider an adjustment for loads that are returning, industrial loads that are returning. We experienced a pandemic. There are industrial loads that left our service territory, but they have a potential of coming back. And so this specific adjustment is just to take into account that loads, industrial loads good return. We have one in our service territory. Good return, and for BPA to be more forward-looking to adjust the CHWM calculation when those loads do return. And Snohomish, other utilities, and BPA agree that the new contracts should take into account that potential cost. That potential industrial loads coming back.
And is that happening across the BPA territory, not just here?
Yes, the load adjustment would be for every industrial loads returning in any of BPA customer service territory.
So we not only have a major airline industry returning, but we also have one in development for electric air travel. And that could really add a lot to the demand. Maybe that's too far out to even think about, but I think they're already flying limited routes. Aware about that?
I am aware of that. I don't know what the load requirements are for that.
I don't think they're not yet.
But there will be continuing, at least in the near term for us, increased industrial load. You look at the Arlington area and others, but this is really just thinking about specifically Boeing as an example,
who shut down
some of their production and their own use coming back.
So this brings us to the timeline for right now. The workshops are paused. BPA in turn is going around the region to present this updated concept that they have developed with customers. The first of those roadshows will be next week in Idaho, and the closest one to us would be April 18th in Tacoma.
Will those be available by Zoom or something, as well as in person?
The first, I believe the first four ones would be in person, and then the last one in Portland has a WebEx link. I think you can dial into the.
So how do we sign up to get into those? Do you know?
We can
get you that information.
Oh, I'd be very interested.
Sure.
Following that. Time to follow them.
So.
Are we entering then formal, beginning the process of formal negotiations 2024, late 2023? I was just looking at this.
Yeah, the formal negotiations haven't started yet.
Okay, I just contract development. I just saw workshops, okay, so that's not the formal negotiations.
Yeah, not yet.
Okay.
Yep, we're still on that
yep,
section. Policy and broad. And that's all I have for you today.
Thank you.
That timeline seems a little optimistic. I mean, I'm amazed at things like carbon, which is enormous, right? Especially for all the coal requirements. The state law is not going to change because they don't.
That's you that's doing this, not me.
Us, it's a team effort.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Well, it's a huge lift, and it's so important for us.
It is so important.
It's going to impact the cost of providing service for many years to come. So, thank you.
Well, I tell everybody who's interested in these topics that I have great confidence in my staff and our leadership, and of course, our
commission.
Thank you.
Excellent. Great job, Marie. Thank you. And Harrison. That is it for our presentation.
Any other questions or comments before we recess? We will now recess into executive session to discuss legal risks, current practice, or proposed action with our legal counsel.
And it will be in the training center, room 1. 1:30, we will reconvene here for the afternoon session.
Commissioner Wong, can you read it per the guide and just include the time that we're turning into recess, sorry, recessing as well?
No, I didn't see that.
On the guide, the other
sheet. The very bottom of page 1.
I had the wrong one.
Thank you.
Okay, hold on. Just a moment. Thank you. It is now 10:05 a.m. and the board will recess into executive session to discuss legal risks of current practice or proposed action with legal counsel. Under the terms set forth in the Open Public Meetings Act, it is anticipated that the executive session will last approximately 30 minutes and will conclude at 10:35. We will reconvene here at 10:35. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission meeting room at 1:30. Okay, thank you. Our executive session has just ended at 10:38. I mean, 28, thank you. 10:40, okay, you got it.